And there was a question last night about, can you please explain more about letting go? And there was also a question the evening before about, can I explain about right intention, part of the Eightfold Path? So I'm going to weave those two and a little bit more together in a talk to give some more understanding on how we do this wonderful thing called letting go, so that our mind becomes all peaceful, all blissful, and all happy. We learn how to meditate. And I know there are so many different teachings on meditation, and they're all based on a common core teaching of the Buddha. So I always think it's quite good to be able to see things from a different perspective and to add all those things together to get a fuller picture of exactly how things really are. And I'm sure you all know the story of the elephant and the seven blind men all sort of coming together and feeling a different part of the elephant, and instead of arguing on who was right, combining their understanding. And I'm sure you've also heard about the seven blind elephants who one day also wanted to find out what a man was. They'd heard a man, they heard the word, they never actually seen one because they were blind elephants. So the blind elephants, they heard the story about the blind men and the elephant, and they were blind elephants, so they thought they'd try the same trick. They all decided to find a man each, find a person, to feel them and get to know what they were like, and then they'd come back together again and compare notes. But this time they all felt a man each. When they came back, they all agreed, and a man was flat. He squashed the poor man. That's the only way any of us can feel things. But going back to the, it's good to have different perspectives from different monks, from different traditions on the path of meditation, but it all does come down to sort of how to let go. Whether one is doing vipassana, samatha, metta, or breath meditation, or whatever, it really is all about letting go of the cup so the water can be perfectly still all by itself. You know, as Ajahn Chah used to say, you know, it's all about sitting under the mango tree and totally letting go. But it's a very hard thing to do, and so there are some great teachings on how to let go. And the first of those teachings is, you know, straight from the Eightfold Path. And the second factor of the Eightfold Path, which I promised to talk about, it's called Sammasankappa, right intention, sometimes called right thought. But I think the people who translated the Pali into English were all intellectuals, they're all great thinkers. And so they tended to sort of incline towards thinking rather than anything else. Really, it does mean intentions, where you come from before you speak, before you act. You know, it's the mental part of an action, you know, almost like the motivation, where you're coming from. And that particular right intention, it's one of those factors which is not focused on, but it's one of the most interesting ones, because they have three right intentions. The intention of letting go, of renunciation, it's called nekama. The intention of kindness, the intention of gentleness. Those are the three right intentions. And once, you know, you start to see that, and just to focus on that, to contemplate that, sometimes you wonder, why on earth do people forget that core part of the Eightfold Path when they meditate? They know they're trying to get something. You know, was it 4 or 5 days have gone already? And oh, I haven't got nimittas yet, and I'm trying for jhanas. I haven't got jhanas yet. You get frustrated because you're trying to get something. And the Buddha said, no, this path is to renounce things. Give them up. Let them go. See how much you can let go, not how much you can attain. If you get the first jhana on this retreat, I will not give you a medal. You don't see the monks with the line of medals on their chest. It's the first jhana star, the second jhana star, the third and the fourth jhana star. You don't see them with stripes on their on their arms. You know, one stripe for stream winner, two for once returner, three for non-returner, and a big sort of crown on your shoulder for the arahat. We don't do such things because this is not about attaining things, but learning how to let go of things. So much of your life is a lot of stress trying to get something or get somewhere or be someone. And this goes in a totally opposite direction, seeing how little you can have rather than how much. So it's, first of all, it's a path of renunciation, trying to get rid of things. Because one of my favorite similes is of my mother's mantle shelf. A mantle shelf was this shelf which was above the hearth, the fireplace of all British homes. Remember, British homes were always cold. So they always used to have a fireplace somewhere in the house around which the family would congregate. And on top of that fireplace, there'd always be a shelf with knick-knacks and memorabilia. So, having moved to Australia, the first time I went back to visit my mother in London, somebody very kindly brought me like a memento of Australia, a little stuffed kangaroo. So I can give that to my mother, and she could remember her son back in Australia. Okay, it's kitsch, it's not original, but people like those things. So someone gave me about a kangaroo about this size, a little toy one, a fluffy one. And I gave it to my mother, and she was so happy with that little gift. She put it on the mantel shelf so that whenever she was at home relaxing, she could see the kangaroo and think of her son over in Australia. It worked. So the next time I went there, I got someone to purchase a little koala bear. And when I gave it to my mother, she was so happy. She now had a koala to go with the kangaroo. And she put it next to the kangaroo on her shelf. The next time I went there, I managed to get a little kookaburra. And she put the kookaburra next to the other two animals, and a couple of years later, when I visit, I managed to get a platypus. For the shop, just like a furry platypus, because it's Australian. And she liked that too. The problem came the fifth time I went home to visit my mother, somebody gave me a wombat. Now, wombats are quite big, and so was a toy. And so when I gave my mother this wombat, again, she was so happy to get another little fluffy toy of an Australian animal to remind her of me when I was gone. The problem was, she tried to put the wombat on the shelf next to the platypus, kookaburra, koala and kangaroo. But by this time, there was no more space left on the shelf. And so when she put one of those animals on, another couple fell off. Not only those other animals, but other things like photos of my brother and other sort of memorabilia she collected over the years. And she just could not balance the wombat and all the other animals and all the other memorabilia at one time. And I said, now that's a simile of a nervous breakdown, where you try and keep so much stuff in your brain that things start falling off. You just can't keep any more things in there. And I told my mother, Mother, why don't you throw away all those old animals? Auction them, give them to charity. And so you can just keep the new one there. She said, no, I can't. I'm so attached to the kangaroo and the koala and the platypus and the other animal, whatever it was. But this is the trouble with people. We don't know how to let go. We accumulate things. And so I was trying to use that simile. Look, everything to do with the past, renounce it. You've got a shelf called your mind, your memory. Just press the delete button. You don't need all that old stuff. Don't think, oh, I've got to remember this just in case. No, be irresponsible like me and forget. It's much better that way. So when you let go of all of the stuff of the past, that's called renouncing. And I'm not talking about the stuff which happened to you earlier in your life when you were a kid. I'm talking the stuff which happened this morning, a minute ago, even a moment ago. Now you haven't had a good meditation. Oh, what do you mean haven't had a good meditation? I don't know, I can't remember. It's all gone, it's finished, gone, kaput. So remember, learn how to renounce. the past and renounce the future. You don't know what's going to happen in the future. And as an insight I noticed many years ago, which is a powerful way of looking at things, if you really are concerned about your future, if that is important for you, please contemplate on when you can do anything about the future. When is the only time you can do anything about your future? It's now, isn't it? Where is your future being made? Right now. So if you are concerned about your future, if you really want to have a good future, for goodness sake, put all your attention in the present moment, the place where your future is being made. So those are the sorts of things we do. And then the next thing we do, we renounce controlling. You know, I'm a very successful abbot. I've got a big monastery, lots of monks, and the reason we've got lots of monks there is because I let them do what they want to do. And that's why you have a happy monastery. You don't control anybody. I know, because I trust. All the people who become monks, it's so hard to become a monk or a nun. Imagine becoming a nun, how difficult that is. And so they become a monk, they become a nun. You don't need to keep pushing them. They've got so much motivation already. You just need to say, off you go. You know, here are the huts, here are the empty places, go off and meditate. And they do. You don't have to control anybody. And that's the way to have a very successful monastery. And that's also the way to have a very happy mind. Stop controlling your mind. Your mind wants to be happy. It will incline towards happiness. You just need to see, hey, look at this meditation. It's much more happy than all this other stuff you get involved in. And after a while, the mind sees. Just give it a chance. Don't force it, the poor mind. Just cultivate it, nurture it. Just like you nurture trees. You don't keep... Like one person once told me, when his father gave him some seeds in a garden in Bangkok, and he put those seeds in the ground, he was really impatient. So, you know, he'd water them twice, water them every day. After 5 days, nothing was happening. Have you had that experience in meditation, 4 or 5 days, and nothing is happening? So you think, what's going on? So he got very upset and told his father. His father explained to him, look, you're building up. You know, all the energy, you know, it's coming. Just keep watering a little bit longer. And then soon you'll see the shoots come up above the ground. They're probably growing right now, even though you can't see it. Your jhanas are just sprouting and they're just coming up, they're coming up. You can't see it, but I can. So just keep nurturing. Don't support it. But what he did, as soon as they started coming up, as soon as he got some peace, as soon as he started seeing a little bit of grass coming up, he was so impatient. He wanted to stretch the plants to make them grow quicker, stretching them. And of course, he killed all of them. That's a wonderful simile about the impatience in meditation. Remember, we've got to put forth the time, the effort to nurture the mind, and then it does grow like a tree. People are really impatient. They just can't wait to watch a tree grow. You know, just sometimes it takes years to make these trees grow. I've been in Bodhinyana Island Monastery 30 years. I remember many of those trees which are planted. At first they were just so small, you never thought they would take, but now they're beautiful trees in that monastery. And you may have had in your place where you live, in your garden, trees which you planted years and years ago, which maybe your father or grandfather planted, and now they're beautiful trees. That's the sort of patience we need. Or just like the other story I like telling about the guy who went to work on the building site on a Monday morning. He worked really hard, and at the end of the day he went back home with nothing. He didn't even get paid. He went on a Tuesday and Wednesday, the same thing happened, still didn't get paid. Went there on a Thursday, 4 days in a row he worked so hard and didn't get anything. And it was only the cajoling from his wife that he went there on a Friday as well. And on a Friday he got a big pay packet. And so when he went home on Friday evening, he told his wife, I figured out this work business now. I'm just going to go to work on Fridays from now on. And you know, this is sometimes happens in your meditation. Sometimes you get a good meditation, yes, at last, the next one doesn't work. Every day can't be payday. So you just keep on going. You're building up, nurturing the mind. And that's the patience which we have. So what we do is just to be patient, we just let go of the future. And that's such an important thing to let go of. Because so much of the obstacles in meditation comes from expectation, anticipation. And I think you've all got enough trust in me. You know I'm a good monk, I've got a good track record. So I think you trust that what I say is actually true, it actually works. But the problem is, you're waiting for something to happen in the meditation, in this retreat. You hear me say these things, and you know it works, so you're waiting for it to happen. When you wait for things to happen, you're waiting in the wrong place. Why I said there's two types of waiting. Waiting in the future and waiting in the present. They're very different. Waiting in the future is waiting for something to happen. Waiting for someone to come through the door. Waiting for some great experience to occur. You're actually not in the present moment anymore. You're off into the future. It's such a common thing for us to be waiting for something to happen that we do that also in our meditation. I think you can understand when you wait in the future, you're missing what's happening right now. You're just waiting for something to happen next, not really appreciating what's happening now. So be careful, because waiting for something to happen is waiting in the future, and it stops the meditation happening. So instead we wait in the present moment. We're here right now, and we let go of all this expectation, anticipation business. Now I'm stressing this present moment because, my goodness, it is a very powerful way of letting go. If you can fully focus in this present moment, I mean 100% in this moment, you can't do anything. To do something, you need some place to go, something to achieve, which is always next, in the future, sometime later on. If you're really in the present moment, you just can't do anything. You're here. As I said, you've arrived. Sometimes that's another of those words they say, when you made your fortune, when you become famous, when you become a celebrity, they say, you've arrived. I'm not going to wait to become a celebrity, to become rich or famous. I've arrived now. Every moment I think of myself, yes, I've arrived. Here I am. And if you understand the idea of arrived, you're here. You put all your attention on what it feels like to be here. What is this here? What's happening right now? With no expectation for the future. Often in meditation, if I'm meditating and there seems to be a blockage, there's two things I usually do. This is my personal practice. Either I just add a little bit more kindness, or I just focus more on the present moment. Even deep in meditation, even nimitta stage. The nimitta is not really developing, I just go right into the present moment, focus more sharply in the moment. And usually that really takes off into deep meditation. Because the thought was I was just anticipating something. I wasn't really in the moment, which gave me the opportunity to do something. I couldn't really let go. So the renouncing is really important. When you don't want anything, when you don't need anything, then at last you're happy. You know, there was those early years when I was a monk in Thailand, had nothing to do, didn't really need anything, no responsibility except just to sweep the paths. I remember one man came up to me once. I'd helped him, solved a problem for him, and he was so grateful, he wanted to show gratitude by giving me a gift. Now, as a monk, I'm not allowed to accept money. So I usually say, put it in the donation box. But there is a loophole. There are always loopholes. And the loophole is, you can't give me any money, but you can say, Ajahn Brahm, I have $100 for you. What do you want for $100? Not for the monastery or the temple or the retreat center. They get enough money. This is for you. They must have something personal. personal you need or what. Please don't do that to me. Because what happened in time, they said 100 baht. You know, I've got 100 baht for you, just tell me what you want. And when you don't have money, you haven't been shopping for years, you know, you don't know what you want. So my mind went totally blank. I said, I haven't got a clue what I want. And the guy said, come on, look, I've got to go to work. So at least I was smart enough. I said, look, let me think about this tonight, and you come back tomorrow, and I'll give you a list of what I want for 100 baht. And the guy said, yes, good idea. I'll see you tomorrow. So that evening, after the evening meeting and chanting, I sat in my little hut, you know, with a candle, and I didn't have actually any paper. It was actually the back of a mosquito coil wrapping I wrote on. And straight away I thought, my goodness, it's really bad for your eyes, just writing by a candlelight. What you really need is one of these oil lamps. So that's the first thing I put down, oil lamp. And obviously oil lamp means a little bottle of kerosene and some matches. Always running out of matches in these monasteries. And look at the paper I'm writing. I just want an exercise book, nothing fancy, just a simple exercise book. And I was writing in a pencil, which was just almost dead anyway. So, you know, just an ordinary biro pen and that sort. And thinking about writing, I hadn't written to my mother for a long time, so I needed some little aerograms. So I wrote down aerograms as well. And then I started tallying up how much this cost. And oh my God, it was more than 100 baht. I'd exceeded the limit. And you know, once I wrote them down, I couldn't take anything off. Actually, instead of taking things off, I started thinking of more things I needed. Talking about light, my flashlight was really gone. I needed a new flashlight with the batteries to go in it. And actually, when you're walking in the forest over there, there's so many creepy crawlies, centipedes and there's scorpions and snakes as well. And you know, I didn't have any shoes, so I also wrote down a pair of, you know, simple shoes. And the longer I thought, the more things appeared on that piece of paper. And I really didn't know how I would survive, how I had survived without those things. And I couldn't take anything off, and there's about 1,000 baht now. And so I realize what's happening. Once you have desire, even though you think they're necessary things, I managed to do without those before. As soon as I wrote them down on a piece of paper, they became important desires and needs, and I couldn't take anything off. And I realized what was going on. I took that piece of paper, screwed it up, and threw it in the spittoon. And I told that man the next day, don't you ever do that to me again. I was so happy before you gave me that opportunity. Now, I was just so in turmoil. How could I get these things? What should I do to get them? So this was one of the problems. When you don't have anything, when you really are renounced, you're so free. You literally want for nothing. Once you start any desire for anything, it starts off with a desire and then it becomes a necessity. It all starts off with a desire. You don't really need it. You will survive. You won't die without, you know, without the fly screens on the caretaker's cottage or whatever else you want. You're asking me this morning. So this is actually how we learn to let go and be simple. So what do you really need? You don't really need nimittas and jhanas. What do you want them for anyway? Look, if you get nimittas and jhanas, you know, you're getting married soon. You won't be able to get married if you get a jhana. That would really suck. You know, you want to become a nun instead. Your boyfriend will really get angry at me. You taught my fiancé jhanas and now look what's happened. So, when you want something, then it all goes pear-shaped. So when you renounce everything, you don't want anything in the world. It's amazing, just as a simple monk with hardly anything, living so far below the poverty level, if Amnesty International had seen me in those days, they would have closed the monastery down. They would have said, this is more poor than the villagers, and this is human rights abuse and everything else. That's why we're very, very careful. Yeah, you know, we sometimes support things like Amnesty International and other things, but imagine if Amnesty International found out the way that monks lived. You don't get any money at all. I mean, even when you're out of work, you get money. Even when you're living in a refugee camp, you get money. We get no money at all. You go to my place where I live over in in the cave. I sleep on the floor. Apparently, they said even people who got no money in places like England, you get free video and TV. It's called a necessity of life. They do. They give it to you for free. I haven't got any of that. I'm deprived. Because I'm deprived, the Buddhist Society of Western Australia will be open to legal challenges and be sued for depriving me of the necessities of life. But no, you can see that you can be so content and happy just with little. Why is that? Because you're letting go, you're renouncing. We live in a very affluent world. The more you have, does it make you more happy? You know it doesn't. It's more troubles. Look at your houses. I remember my house where my family lived. They didn't have much furniture. You can actually move around. Sometimes I go in some people's houses, you can't even move around. This sofa here, you just got to negotiate your way around all this stuff. And a lot of it is just old stuff, which you don't really need anyway. It's all a waste of time. So wouldn't it be wonderful to have little? And look how many rooms people have these days in their houses. Singapore is okay because, you know, it's such a small country. But you go to Australia, some of these houses, they're mansions. They've got so many rooms in them. That really sucks when you have to clean them. I still remember someone coming to see a hut years and years and years ago. They were actually going to see the Benedictine monastery, and then they saw our monastery. They were comparing them. And they saw one of the huts, and straight away the woman who saw this said, turned around and said, "Is that where you live?" "That's where I live. That's my home." And they said, "Wow. If I lived in a place like this, I could get all my housework done in half an hour and the rest of the week would be free." Instead of actually taking hours and hours and hours looking after the house. So having little possessions is really a lot of freedom. And it's also having few spiritual possessions is a lot of freedom as well. So don't try and be a spiritual materialist. Just like you are sometimes a things materialist, the ordinary meaning of materialism. Because a lot of times we just try and accumulate more experiences. I want to get the jhanas, I want to have nimittas, I want to have this experience and that experience. That's called spiritual materialism. It's more wanting. And you find you never get it that way. So instead of having this trying to accumulate things, our job is to simplify. That's why we have monks and nuns, because we have few possessions, we can't get things, we do try and simplify. We have fewer and fewer and fewer things. Many of you have met me at airports. How many suitcases do I carry when I go overseas? None. I have my little bag, which you saw me bring here. That's all I have. Even when you go to North America for a couple of weeks, that's all I have, my little bag. No suitcases, no backpacks, nothing. You've seen me do that. Now, isn't that wonderful to be able to fly like a bird, letting go with few possessions? I'm not saying to renounce because it's going to make life more suffering for you. This is not torture. The torture is having too many things. So it's great when you let go, both physically and spiritually. Have less things. Because do you really want to become enlightened? If you become enlightened, then you'll have to go all around the world giving talks, and people ask you questions all day, and they spend all this time making you sign autographs and take photographs. That sucks. That's not a nice thing to spend your time doing. If you get enlightened and you tell somebody, you'll have to spend the rest of your life trying to prove it. People are always looking at you, trying to find a fault. Aha, she's not enlightened, I saw her get angry. So just don't even want to become enlightened. Don't even want to get jhanas. Don't want anything. That means you've already arrived. You've got everything you ever needed. You don't need to work anymore, spiritually or materially. You've got enough. Then you can become enlightened. Do you get the point? Wanting. Trying to get something that takes you off into the future. You're waiting for something to happen, what you want to happen. And you're you're stopping the peace and the stillness which causes enlightenment. You're stopping the natural process of a little plant growing. You're pulling it up, you're stretching it. That's why the meditation doesn't work. So letting go means leaving things alone. Stop getting involved. What more do you want? That's another way of letting go. To say, what do I want? What do you want? If I was a genie and I gave you 3 wishes, what would those wishes be? The 3 wishes simile. What would you want if you had 3 wishes? $1 billion? To pay off a nun's monastery? To have your own perfect nun's monastery? I mean a perfect nun's monastery. You know, with your own hut, air conditioned, with decent food, whatever you like, room service. And the Buddha at your call every time. You can just like ring up or Skype the Buddha to ask all the questions on meditation. You like that? That's a lot of suffering. You just have to do with what you've got. I know it sucks, but you've got no choice. But I think when you want something, there's no end to it. So a wise person is somebody, if a genie came up and asked you, you have 3 wishes, anything in the world, what do you want? And if you can say, nothing, nick off, go away, go, then that's a sign that you're wise. You don't want more things, you want less things. If you know that, you know about what meditation is. And if you know what meditation is, it's renouncing. The less you have, the more empty, the more free your mind is. You can really enjoy and be peaceful now. So, that's one of the first ways of letting go, to renounce, not to want anything. And then you can really enjoy what you already have. It's called contentment. How much do you need to be content? What do you need to be content? What do you keep striving for? Again, as some people, they do this in our modern world. They get the material benefits. They don't really have much happiness there. They really go into the spiritual world because now, yeah, I know just having fame and money just doesn't really work, but now I want the spiritual things. And it's the same thing, always wanting, which means they never have any peace. But imagine if you're just content. I'm happy with who I am. I'm stupid. I'm an idiot. I can't meditate for my life. Great. I'm content. Isn't contentment happiness? I often ask people, in your life so far, in all the years you've lived, when have you been the happiest? And if you look at that time, if you remember the time you've been the most happiest, the most happy, it's usually when you were so content. It may have been a moment when you didn't want anything different in the whole world. The person you were with, or the people you were with, or just by yourself, the place where you were, you couldn't even change it to make it better. It was just perfect as it was. Nothing missing, nothing to be changed. Totally content. At peace with yourself and the whole world around you. Contentment. We call that a taste of freedom. A taste of enlightenment. That's what it's like. To be totally content. Nothing missing. Nothing to be gained. Nothing to get rid of. Just totally resting, enjoying this moment. Have you had times like that? Most people have. Perfect contentment. Otherwise known as perfect love. Which is the same as contentment. Just happy with the people you're with. Now, that gives you an idea what, again, the meditation is. Learn how to be content with what you have. Yeah, I'm an old fat monk these days. Yeah, I tell the same old jokes and stories time and time again. Yeah, I have to do all this traveling and stuff, like writing books and signing photographs, but I'm content.
is good enough. I would not rather be with anyone else in the whole world than with you guys and girls, just giving another talk on a Tuesday morning. Perfectly happy, perfectly content. Now that is what letting go is. As soon as you think, no, instead of these stupid people sitting in front of me, I want real meditators. I want meditators who can sit for hours, who can understand what I'm saying, and say yes, and get enlightened, and get jhanas, and never ask any more questions because they're so wise. If you want anybody to be different, that's called suffering. That's not contentment at all. So in meditation, a lot of my life as a monk, I just have to do a lot and lot and lot of contentment. This is good enough for me. So if you develop contentment, you're sitting here with your dull, stupid old mind. You say, oh, I'm happy with this dull, stupid old mind. It ain't that bad. It's good enough. So you accept it. You open the door of your heart to it. You're content with it. It's not perfect, no more than any tree in the forest is perfect, but it's beautiful. It's enough just to find peace with. This moment, it's hot, it's cold, you're tired, you're bored, you're restless, whatever it is, it's good enough. And you're content. You let go of all wanting, all controlling, all trying to be somewhere else, which means you are here. Craving stops, wanting disappears, because you're content. And it's amazing what you can be happy with. Have you seen little kids? They can play with a blade of grass and are so content and happy. Why do we need so many things to be happy, like limiters and stuff? Can't we just be happy now with what we've got and be content? If you do, you know one of the secrets of letting go. This is good enough. This is good enough. You try that. You know, with sincerity, you try here. You're nodding, you're fast, this is good enough. And straight away, you start to get energy coming up. You're still, you're peaceful, you're content, not wanting anything. And you're just opening up the lotus really quickly. And you go very deep, very quickly. Contentment, a way of letting go. I mentioned that earlier with the simile of the prison and being free. You compare Bodhinyana Monastery over the road, just 2 meals a day, to a prison. In a prison you have 3 or 4 meals a day. You also have menu. I mean, you get much better food in prison than you get in Jhana Grove or Bodhinyana Monastery. You know, you can have sausages and bacon if you like. You don't have to be a vegetarian. You know, you can have a whole big choice of food. Anything you want, you can get in prison. Not only that, you can watch the movies on plasma screen TVs. You can watch the soccer. You can do whatever you like there. You can play sport. You can do all this sort of stuff. Can you do any of that in a monastery? No, just meditate. That's all we ever do there. So, I always think that if ever I'm put in jail, that'd be like a holiday for me. I can eat 3 meals. I can watch the TV. I can sleep on nice beds, I don't have to sleep on the floor anymore. And if ever I want to retreat when I'm in prison, I just need to punch a prison officer and I get 3 months solitary and no one can bother me in there. So if ever I went to jail, I'd quite look forward to it. So why is it that people try to escape from jails, but no one ever tries to escape from monastery? Yeah, we've got a wall there. That's actually to keep people out, not to keep the monks in. So why? What's the difference between a monastery and a prison? The only difference is, in a monastery, people want to be there. That's the only difference. In a prison, they don't want to be there. No matter how luxurious you make a prison, if you don't want to be there, it is a prison for you. So in this meditation, how many times have you been in prison during the meditation? How many times do you want to be somewhere else? How many times, I just don't want to be here. I want to just, anywhere else. I'm not quite sure where it wants to be, but not here. I don't want to meditate. Okay, I've had enough. 4 or 5 days, nothing's happening. I don't want to be here. I just want to be somewhere else. you just made a prison for yourself. This is the opposite of freedom. If you want to be free, it doesn't matter where you are, how uncomfortable it is. If you want to be here, then you become free. I've done a lot of times, sometimes even in physical pain. Yeah, I'm old, I've had my physical illnesses and pains. Instead of trying to get rid of the pain, I just want to be here. The pain is teaching me something. Thank you, pain. Welcome. And I'm happy to be here. Maybe it's not such great pain that I get these days because I'm pretty healthy. But you know, sometimes, as I mentioned to somebody, the yuckiness of the body when you're over 60. You know, just the body is not as soft and as pliable as it is when you were young. So just this little ache, constant ache, and just, you know, you have a talk, you get up afterwards and ooh and ah. You know what I do. That's why, you know, in Thailand, that old joke in Thailand, old people, the word for Mr. in Thai is poor, and the word for Mrs. is Mayor. And so they call all the old people Poor Oi and Mayor Oi. And you know why they call them Mr. Oi and Mrs. Oi? Because whenever they get up, that's all what they say. Oi, oi, oi. And that's actually true. You ask, you know, Sue D or Ping Pong, they always call them Poor Oi and Mayor Oi. So some of you are Mrs. Oi. I've heard you. That's what it's like. So what do you do? I'm just happy to be here. This is good enough. I'm content. And you know, you can be content with almost anything. Even things which are just really awful, like, you know, like fog on rice for lunch. Just be content with. And when you feel how you can be content with anything, it's so easy to meditate. Yeah, I feel a bit tired, but I'm content. This is good enough for me. Who do I think I am? I'm just a monk. So I'm just content, happy being here. And as soon as you're content, you get this boost of happiness. You don't want to be anywhere anymore. You don't need anything more. You can relax and be free. As soon as you want something, as the Buddha said, when you want something, you're separated from what you want. And that's called suffering. Suffering is separation from what you want. So when you want something, you're always going to suffer. So when you want nothing, you're totally free of suffering. This is a brilliant, beautiful way to meditate. I'm sitting here, I don't want anything in the whole world, just to be with my oi body and my stupid mind. I'm so happy to be here. That's letting go. That takes a lot of guts to try that, not to try and be enlightened, not to try and better yourself. Not to try and get anywhere. Not to try and be different. To be yourself. Let the mind be. Let the body be. And stop trying to mess around with it. Just be content. It's called letting go. But it's also called kindness. Which is the second part of the right intention. Intentions or motives of letting go. Motives of kindness. Exactly the same. Kindness, opening the door of your heart to whatever's happening, no matter what it is. It's the unconditional kindness. If it's only liking the stuff or being kind to things you like, that's so easy. Anyone can do that. Anyone can be kind to that little rabbit that Danny has got. But can you be kind, you know, to the snake? Can you be kind to the mosquito? Keeps buzzing in your ear just when you're about to get into jhana. Buzz, 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 buzz. Shut up, I'm trying to get jhana. Buzz, 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 buzz. You're making bad karma, Mossy. Buzz, 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 buzz. Mosquitoes don't understand karma. Whatever it is, if you are really kind, if you really know what kindness is, you're kind to anything and everything. So you open the door of your heart, your old sick body. Ah, it doesn't matter, body. You're old, you're sick. But I still love you to bits. You're okay, body. Now, you can fall asleep when you're meditating. It's okay to fall asleep. Body, if that's what you want to do, just like my grandmother, if you want chips, if you want biscuits, if you want anything, I will give it to you because I love you. Can you do that to your body and to your mind?
If it wants to go and think about all sorts of stupid things, okay, that's what you want, go and do it. And you're not waiting for it to behave. You love it for what it does, whatever it does. You really are kind. You've got real compassion. You open the door of your heart to your body, to your mind, to your meditation, no matter what it is, no matter what. You love it. Then, I mean, where's the problem in your meditation? You know, what are you trying to get? Jhanas, nimittas, sloth and torpor, restlessness, you love everybody equally. And if you can do that, you finally get it's not wanting anymore, not controlling. You're just totally happy, be compassionate to every moment, the beautiful ones and the ugly ones. Every moment, you have unconditional kindness and awareness towards. So, where's the problem in the meditation? All the striving, all the thing, I haven't managed to do anything yet. Oh, I need to do some more work. It's not working. I'm not good enough. I haven't got jhanas yet. What happens in this retreat? You're not teaching it right. I've got to do something else. It's not working. Oh, shut up. Just be kind to whatever's happening. And then it's all working. As I mentioned earlier, and I'm going to stress again, it does not matter what you're aware of. I don't care what you're aware of. Sexual fantasies, the weird, deviant sexual fantasy you can possibly imagine, or fast asleep, or dreaming of becoming a Christian. I don't care what you're thinking of. Or, you know, if you already are, and becoming a Muslim or whatever. I don't care what you're thinking of, as long as you're kind and making peace. The object you're aware of is not important. Are you letting go? Are you renouncing all this stuff? Are you being kind and opening the door of your heart to whatever happens? If you are, that's called meditation. And are you being the last one? Being gentle. Be so gentle to your mind. You've treated it so hard over the years. And your body, you've also treated that very, very harshly. I treated my body harshly over the years, forcing it, making it work hard, giving it food it didn't like, getting sick and just forcing through. I've treated my body unkindly, and so each one of you, please stop. Be kind to this body. Now, I'm really actually quite surprised my body is still hanging out with me. It has to sort of divorce me and say, I'm dying. I'm not going to stay with you any longer. But no, now you can be kind to your body. If you need to rest, rest. If you want an extra spoon of sugar in your tea, just take it. Be kind. Whatever it is, because when you're kind to your body, and you're kind to the mind, you're gentle with it, the body gets so fit and healthy. It just, oh great, you know, I'm going smoothly. I can relax, I can heal, I can have good sleeps. So be gentle with your body and be gentle with your mind. That's the third part of right intention. Can you ever see any force here, any negativity, any toughness in these three ways? Let go, be kind, be gentle. This is Buddhism. There was always a disconnect sometimes between what I heard of the Buddha being so compassionate and some of the ways people would teach meditation. And a disconnect. I thought, oh, maybe meditation was different than the teachings of the Buddha. And he's saying, be compassionate, be kind, loving everybody. And the teacher was saying, sit down, back straight, an hour, not 45 minutes, don't give up. There was a disconnect there. There was no gentleness there. There was no kindness. And I realized that wasn't real meditation. The real meditation has always got to be renouncing, letting go of things, not trying to get more things. That's the way of the world. So please give up any goal of trying to get nimittas and jhanas. You haven't got anything yet. Give up. You're not going to get anything. So you might as well give up. You know this happens so often. But I always remember this one lady. She's a really nice disciple. See her a lot. I won't say which country she's in. but she's between Thailand and Singapore. But she was on one of these retreats years ago. 9-day retreats, just like most stupid people. Struggling, trying hard, sitting, trying to get nimittas and jhanas. I know she was pretending not to, but she was. And the retreat finished. She got nowhere. You know what it's like. You know, you really tried. You followed all the instructions, so you think. We haven't really understood them. She was pretty down and depressed and really sort of put a lot of effort and time into getting some meditation. She knew it was a good teacher, but she thought she was just stupid. But she had 1 hour to kill before the taxi came to take her to the airport. I like that word, 1 hour to kill. She had nothing to do. So she just sat in meditation to kill time. For the first time, not to get jhanas, not to get nimitta, not to get peace. Well, just nothing to do, just kill time. And afterwards she came out and she came to see me on the ground. Oh, I jump, oh, it's so wonderful. Oh, at last, I've got these wonderful stays. Oh, thank you, thank you, thank you. I always remember that. You know, she got her really first deep meditation because she was killing time. Well, that was really a very good example, because when you try to get something, you never get anything. When you sort of give up, renounce, oh, I'm hopeless. Me, look. But I'll tell you now, girls can't get jhana. What? What? No way. So, just give up. There's no hope for you girls. Then you might get jhana when you let go. That's not true, of course. Anyone can get jhanas. So when you stop trying and you give up and you let go, that's when you get all these amazing things. So this is what letting go means. You know, you renounce. Don't try and attain things, for goodness sake. You've done that all your life. Getting your O-levels, your A-levels, getting a good boy or girl to get married, getting enough money to buy a house, getting on in work, getting on in this and getting on in that. Oh, gee, it just really sucks. I've had enough of that. I'm not going to try and attain anything anymore. I've arrived. This is me. This is good enough. Take it or leave it. And that, when you don't try and aspire for things, when you don't try and want things, this is good enough. The door of my heart is open to my stupidity. Remember that monk who couldn't even pass grade one? Now that's a meditator. Someone who doesn't aspire for anything. It's just so peaceful, so happy. Doesn't have to be intelligent, doesn't have to be wise. It's just happy to be who they are in this moment. Total contentment. If you manage to understand that, you understand how to let go and how meditation works. All striving goes against the point. It never gets there when you let go. And there will come a time, you'll find that letting go button. Somehow or other, sometime, either through frustration or wisdom, or just one day say, I'm going to really let go this time. You press the letting go button, and my goodness, it is incredible what happens. You just, on this journey, deep inside of yourself, the lotus opens really quick, you can go really deep inside, and you don't do anything. You've let go. And that has happened so many times. When people, disciples, they come up to me and they said, yes, they did get a jhana, and I you don't have to explain it to me. You can see it written all over your face if you've got a jhana. It's a wonderful thing to see. Just, oh, it's like falling in love, only much better than that. You're just so happy, so blissed out. Nothing could harm you at all. So, when you actually see someone like that, I used to ask them, what did you do this time? You got this jhana. And yet they always said the same thing. So I don't ask them anymore because I know what the answer is. I really let go. They always say, I really let go. I did it properly for a change. I really let go.
Now I'm sharing that with you because that is how these things happen. You really let go. You don't play letting go anymore. It's not fake. It's not acting. You really let go. Some people say, okay, I'm going to really let go. I'm really letting go. Okay, but that's fake. You know it's fake. You're letting go to try and get something. That's not letting go. In the moment, totally at peace with what's happening right now. Not wanting anything in the whole world. Nothing you want. You're just content. This is good enough for me. I'm not going to get anything anyway. I'm hopeless. I'm just killing time. I'm just being here. Just being here. Moment after moment, you make peace. You're kind. You're gentle. And the meditation just happens. In spite of you. I often say when people ask me personally, Ajahn Brahm, you know, can you attain these things you all talk about? And I'm honest. I say, Ajahn Brahm cannot meditate. Ajahn Brahm can't get jhanas. Ajahn Brahm can't do this. When Ajahn Brahm disappears, when he's not there anymore, then these things happen. Do you understand? I can't do these things. I vanish. And then letting go happens, and all these things just occur. You get it? Vanish, disappear. Let go, renounce, don't want anything. And you're totally content, all these things happen as a natural result. Just you put the cup down, it's just still, that's all it is. You let go. And meditation happens when you are not in control anymore. That is what meditation is. That's what letting go is. So give up all hope. Stop trying, let go, and enjoy. Okay, that's the talk on letting go today. I do hope you enjoyed it, but if you didn't, I don't care. I've given up all hope. Okay, three good sadhus. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Yes. Okay, so we have interviews now.